There's no set timeline for when a homicide case becomes cold. Some cold cases Dallas police are investigating are more than 30 years old, while others are a little more than a year old. But police say cases go cold when detectives simply run out of leads. Today on the Texas Crimecast, we look into how the Dallas Police Department investigates cold cases. I'm Julie Fancher.
And I'm Tasha Chaparis. Our guests today are Sergeant Joe Garza and Detective Eddie Ibarra. Garza works in the homicide unit and keeps case files after homicide detectives transfer or retire. Ibarra, who was recently named the Dallas Police Department's Detective of the Year, is one of four detectives who investigate cold cases as well as officer-involved shootings and assaults. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Sergeant Garza, can you speak to your experiences with families of the victims?
What usually happens is that I'll get a phone call, and initially it's like, hey, you know, I want to know what's going on with my sons or my daughter or my husband, you know, some relative, friend's case. And usually I have to start with saying, I apologize, but I don't know exactly which case you're talking about. And then usually from that point, it can range anywhere from 10 years ago to 30 years ago. So at that point, then I get as much information as I can from them and start dealing with them in a personal way.
And Sergeant, you've developed somewhat personal relationships with some of them. I mean, they'll call on their loved one's birthday or the day of their death, or the holidays especially are a rough time. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, obviously those are the times when they start to remember. And not that they never forget, but what they do is at that point it becomes really, it hits home for them. And so, yeah, there's a few that I've gone through conversation pretty close to, you know, and I hear from them I really enjoy speaking with them, but I also dread it, because if I can't give them anything concrete on their loved one's case, it's disappointing, and I feel that in their voice, even though they're grateful to just be talking about it from time to time.
So it's kind of like having to tell them all over again that it's still open.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And we got into our profession to help people. And when you can't always do that, it's difficult. And we take ownership of these cases. So the emotional attachment that we get, even if we've never met them personally, even over the phone, it's a developing relationship that, you know, just grows. And like I said, you feel for them. And in one particular instance, you know, she lives out in West Texas, but she calls and she's very grateful. And actually, we got off to a rocky start at the very beginning, but now I'll call her, she calls me, and we keep in touch that way. So it's in that regard, I'm glad that we're able to help them.
And Detective, can you talk a little bit about what the process is in investigating the cold case? Some of these cases you've never seen before. Another detective originally investigated it, and you have to come in and take over. Can you talk about that a little bit?
When we get information particular in one of the cases that has gone cold or has been labeled a cold case, either Sergeant Garza or somebody within our chain of command will say, hey, we've got some information pertaining to this case. Can you follow up on it? We'll go and see if it's already been archived or where the file is at. And that's part of the initial step, is looking at the file, see what was done with it, see what type of physical evidence you have, see if any possible DNA evidence exists. And that's where you first start. You start off by looking at that, because if it's a case that you are not aware of or are not familiar with or was worked by another detective, you're going to have to restart that investigation. You're going to have to relook at everything. You're going to have to pretty much work it from like day one.
So that means talking to witnesses again, looking back over evidence?
The evidence would be number one. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of, in today's technology and the development of DNA, that would be the first thing that we would look at, it to see if any biological evidence was recovered at the scene, either at autopsy, that could be submitted for DNA testing. That would be number one. Secondly, would be to follow up on the witnesses that were available at the time, see if they're still around. Some have either moved away from, you know, out of town, or could be possibly deceased already, if the case is that old. But that would be the second thing to do, is to follow up on any witness information that we could develop and confirm that they still remember. And you'd be surprised, a lot of these witnesses, the incident was such a traumatic event that they do remember.
But DNA doesn't necessarily mean a slam dunk in solving the case. I mean, there's still a lot that you have to do, you know, putting the DNA into databases that maybe the suspect's DNA isn't in a database. Can you talk a little bit about DNA?
Yeah. DNA now, with the development of it and the advances that we have, it really has helped solve a lot of cases. DNA has also exonerated a lot of people that have been incarcerated. So it works two ways. The DNA is critical, but at the same time, you're still going to have to talk to the individual that you are looking at as a potential suspect to get a statement from him, to see why his DNA was present at the scene. Because who knows? I mean, he might have known the victim, or he might have hung out with them. We still don't. We would have to establish the relationship between both of them.
So just because someone was there doesn't mean that they committed the crime.
Correct.
And that kind of brings up the issue of, sometimes it seems that detectives have a strong sense of who probably killed someone, but they can't prove it. Can you talk a little bit about what happens in those cases?
Those cases are frustrating because you have an idea, or you have a person of interest, and you're trying, and your physical evidence might be very weak. Those cases are frustrating because you know you're there, you just can't get it over the hump to get it to be sent to the district attorney's office for the preparation for trial. You still got to continue to work the cases, because if you continue, you might be able to get to developing something new, a new witness that has either surfaced or has been not willing to cooperate and has now had a change of heart. You have to look at that as well.
What Eddie's saying is all true, and what we all are cognizant in is that we have one shot and one shot only. We may have enough to make an arrest, but we may not have enough to go to trial. And I know that sounds kind of silly, but, you know, probable cause and beyond a reasonable doubt are two totally and very different.
And you use those terms. Can you define that for just the general public? What does probable cause mean and beyond a reasonable doubt?
Probable cause is, let's do it this way. If you're looking at a scale, probable cause would be, say, what would you say, Eddie?
At a lower level standard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's giving you the ability to ask a judge that you have reason to believe that this individual committed this crime. So you are asking for the authority to...
It would be less than 50%.
Right. To arrest him,
you know,
for the time.
Preponderance of the evidence would be right at 50%, which is another term, which is like 51% is usually what you do for preponderance of the evidence, which is mostly in a civil case. And then, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt would be, say, in the 99% percentile. So probable cause is a reasonable person would believe that this person committed this particular offense, mm-hmm. All right? And like Eddie said, you go in front of a judge, and the judge says, okay, I believe that you have enough to take this person and arrest him, which is what we're doing. We're actually taking the body and speaking with that person if he's willing to talk to us. Again, if we can release him, but a lot of times in cases of cold cases, if they get wind early on that we're looking at them, then there's a good chance that we won't be able to find them again. So we, in cold case situations, it's a lot more difficult to get the conviction because of time, mm-hmm. just of time.
How do you explain to a family member, we may have enough evidence to arrest this person, but we don't feel confident bringing it to trial? I mean, how do you explain that to a family member who wants to see this closed?
That's when you have to have a very open dialogue with the family and explain to them the process. in today's society, the shows out there that are on TV make it sound like one day you make an arrest, tomorrow you already convicted him, and then the next day he's gone to prison. It's not like that. It's not, that's not the reality of law enforcement or the homicide investigations. And that's why it's important that a detective or an investigator that's working these type of cases takes the time to educate the family, because they're going to go based on what they see on TV. They're not understanding that DNA takes 6 to 8 weeks or 10 weeks. They're not understanding that, well, you know, I can't use what somebody's saying on the street because that's considered hearsay. I have to be able to substantiate that or solidify the information. They don't understand that. So it's important that a detective walks the family or educates the family in the process so they can have a better understanding of what's to be expected.
Are there any cases that still really stick with both of you that you remember and kind of gnaws at you to some extent?
I've been in homicide for the past 10 years, and there's still open cases that I have, and it's not just one, it's several that I haven't been able to bring some type of justice to the family. And those are one of the things that's stick in the back of your head. You wish that you can get to that point. There's some cases where you've just got the lifestyle of that victim hinders the clearance because you've got witnesses that just don't want to cooperate with you. You have a suspicion, but it's one of those cases where the witnesses are in fear of what could possibly happen to them if they got involved or came forward.
So you mean if someone were involved in other criminal activity prior to being killed, it's a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, it's difficult when you have what we call a drug house murder or drug-related murder, and the other individuals that are part of the investigation are also involved in that criminal activity. They don't want to come forward. One, they don't want to expose themselves or be linked to anything else. So that's one of the elements that is becomes difficult in resolving these type of cases.
What about you, Sergeant? You talk to a lot of family members and relatives. Are there some that really get to you?
Yeah, you know, I think they all do. It doesn't make it any easier dealing with family members because it's a loved one that's lost. I don't care what the person is doing or anything like that. We don't treat any case any different from any other case. Some get more publicity than others, obviously, but in our realm and what we deal with every day, they're all the same. They're all special. They all nod at the detective when it doesn't get solved. What I like to tell, you know, all my detectives, especially the young ones when they come over, is that you need to have thick skin. You need to be able to understand that their family is going to get mad at you, and not to take it personally, because it's not that they're angry with you per se or in a personal way. They're angry because they don't have the closure that they feel that they need. At the last moment of their life, that detective is the closest person to their loved one. So it's an emotional attachment that they get with the detective. You know, like I said, it's a true relationship that develops. And like I said, it doesn't matter what happened prior to or what led up to it. They're still a person's loved one. There's still a person that was killed, and obviously nobody deserves that. And that's our main focus, is that one case is not different from another, and we go after them as much and as hard as we can on each and every case. Not that we don't get overwhelmed from time to time, which we do, but that it's just something that we have to, like Eddie says, you prioritize, and you have to be able to switch gears. And a lot of these guys are working, you know, 3 and 4 cases at one time. They have to be able to, all right, stop on this one and let's go to the next one, and back and forth depending on what evidence we have and what is going on at that particular time. So yeah, it's difficult, and it takes its toll. You know, We try to give the guys some time off because they need it. Everybody needs some time to just kind of get away and decompress, because it's very emotional draining sometimes, especially when you have to make a next of kin. You know, you're dealing with family members that don't know what's going on. All they know is the police are coming to see you, you know, and you show up. Sometimes they have an idea. Sometimes they don't. And they just know it's bad. It's got to be bad if we're coming to see them. So that's one of the hardest things that we really have to deal with, I think, is initially. And then, obviously, as time goes on, when the case doesn't get solved, it just becomes harder and harder.
Yeah. You're dealing with people in some of the darkest times of their lives.
Absolutely. So. Yeah.
On a final note, say that someone listening knows some information or wants to know information about the death of a loved one or a friend. How can they get in contact with the police department?
They can call the homicide unit. I'll give you several numbers. If they're calling on a specific case, they can call the main line, which is 214-671-3661, or they can call the Crimes Against Persons main number, which will get back to us also, which is 214-671-3584. If they have information on a specific homicide or information on a possible suspect, anything, a witness, they can call us at those numbers also, or they can call Crime Stoppers. And that number is 214-373-TIPS. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but if you can look on a phone, you can get it. And that's it. They can remain anonymous if they want to. Information on specific homicides, what we need to realize is that we just don't give out information for somebody that calls. So they have to. We're going to have to do some verification, especially on a case. Normally, we deal with, and this is real important on my detective side, because we usually deal with one specific family member. We try to, because if not, then the detective is talking with, you know, 6, 8, 10 different family members, and that's taken away from the time that he's not spending on the case. So we like to deal with one specific family member, and that be the person that can convey and disseminate any information that we may have to the whole family. Because if you tell one family member something and you leave something out to another family member, then it becomes the detective is at fault for saying, why are you telling this family member this and not telling me, when in actuality he may have just forgotten and, you know, it slipped his mind. So we try to limit it just to one, maybe two, depending on the circumstances. But that's basically how we deal with that.
Well, thank you all very much for being with us today, and Detective Sergeant. And again, Detective, congratulations on your Detective of the Year award.
And for more information on the detectives that solve these cold cases, and for more on some specific cold cases, make sure to check out our series Unsolved on DallasNews.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sweet.